Chapter 4, Angel of Light. As Glimmer finished his story, the circle of fellowship grew quiet, except for an occasional sniffle or nose-blowing by some of the younger Emberocs. Christopher's face darkened with distress and anger. He could not endure the silence. Something had to be done. Now. What's the matter with all of you? Are you just going to stand around here and let the Seraph, or whatever you call it, keep on killing? The more he spoke, the more hateful his face became, and the louder his voice grew. I thought Emberocs were clever and brave and good, and had special powers. Grandpa said you were the keepers of nature until men are made right again, but you just let this thing, this monster, torture and kill the creatures you're responsible for. This Seraph must be destroyed. Do you hear me? Destroyed! For a moment he thought the circle was going to break and the Emberocs flee, as they all took several steps back. He yelled, "What's wrong with you?" A gasp came from his new companions, as some of them covered their eyes, and the youngest completely enclosed themselves in their rock-hard capes. A strong hand grasped Christopher's clenched fist. Christopher snapped his head around and glared at Sylvan. The calm quietness in the Umbrock's face seemed to say peace, though no word was spoken. Christopher tried to pull away. He did not want to calm down. He wanted to break something, anything, but he could not move. He could not tell if the Emberock held him fast by his stout grip or simply by his gaze. Christopher felt helpless. He pleaded with Sylvan. What's wrong with them? Sylvan's steady expression allowed only a slight, sad smile. What's wrong with them is what's wrong with you. What does that mean? Christopher snapped again. Means that as you spoke, you seemed to change. The more you spoke, the more you resembled, please forgive me, young master, the more you resembled Seraph. I must say that you almost frightened me as well. I was very concerned for you. Sylvan's composure began to transform Christopher's rage into a more useful passion. But we must do something. That monster must be destroyed. We can't waste any more time. Just think of all the poor creatures it must be torturing and killing. Master, you say so much, but understand so little. You would do better to be slower to speak and slower to anger, but quicker to hear. But we... Sylvan raised his hand. Stop, please, and listen for the answer to your questions. First, your grandfather spoke true. We are the Earth Wards until the true men are revealed. But, dear Master, it is not for Emberocs to destroy. And though humans are quite adept at the practice, it is most often the will of Seraph and seldom the will of the True One. Our mission is to resist and expose Seraph so that he will flee from us and all that is in our care. Seraph, though he has fallen far, is still one of the mightiest of the Mighty Ones, and his destruction lies only in the hands of his master. That's silly. Who wouldn't resist such a detestable thing as a Seraph? Sylvan's brow knitted, and what Christopher first took to be anger. Then he realized it was anguish. In a quieter voice, the Emberock said, Seraph is crafty, and evil has its power to persuade. He wants our allegiance. He wants to rule us in this world. He has gained the allegiance of the bear. Saffron was in danger of losing all her will to resist. And you, dear master, just moments ago your whole being seemed given over to be transformed into his likeness. Christopher's face burned red again as he felt the truth in Sylvan's words. Okay, so I was wrong to be so hateful. But we're wasting time. We've got to do something. All those animals dying. I am certain the torturing has ceased for a time. Seraph believes he has accomplished his desire to make the forest creatures distrustful of Emberocs. I regret to say he has had some success in that, but we have not forsaken those wounded creatures. A great healing is taking place at this moment. Master Christopher, we would be foolish to rush into battle with Seraph or his allies without full knowledge of what he has done thus far. Unprepared and without a strategy, we may not only waste time, but we may also play into Seraph's hands, causing greater pain and destruction. There is more you need to hear, and please, though this will be very difficult for you, attempt to control the fear and anger you will feel. Christopher shifted uncomfortably, not wanting to hear more bad news, but he nodded to Sylvan that he would try to control himself. Sylvan turned and said, "Jasmer, please speak now." The other Imbrock, Christopher's height, the mumbler, stepped forward. He bowed gracefully, first to Christopher, then to Sylvan, and finally to his fellow Imbrocks. "Master, it is a pleasure to show myself to you. I have seen you often, and you have seen me as, well, though not as I now appear, you know me better as..." He covered himself, transforming so rapidly he seemed to vanish, leaving in his place a very familiar, huge, moss-covered stone. Christopher blinked hard in surprise and whispered, "You're the cornerstone in our flower garden." Jasmer unfurled his cape with a huge smile and bowed once more. Sylvan's gentle reminder, "Jasmer, please, we must proceed," chased the pleasantness from his friend's face. With a deep sigh, Jasmer began. "This evening, as I was gathering from the honeysuckle vine near your brother's and sister's window, I heard your grandfather's voice in their room. A story, I thought. I love a good story, and your grandfather tells such wonderful tales." The smile began to creep back into Jasmer's lips. "I especially like the one where Goldenrod finds..." Jasmer glanced at Sylvan and reluctantly returned to his unpleasant task. Well, sorry. "But do tell your grandfather I admire his stories. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. I climbed to the window just in time to see your grandfather leave and your father enter to pray with the children. Their prayers were very short tonight, and they had trouble being still and quiet until your father finished his prayer. No sooner had he said the A of Amen when both children sat up in bed and began begging, 'Daddy, can we go out and sleep with Christopher?'" He mimicked Elise's voice precisely. Christopher stood speechless with his mouth wide open. His look to Sylvan asked, "How did he do that?" Jasmer continued, pleased by Christopher's reaction. "Please, please, please," they both pleaded. "It was really rather annoying, even for me, as much as I love children. I often wonder how children can be so pleasant one moment, and so..." "Jasmer?" "Oh, yes, excuse me. As I was saying, your father showed remarkable patience. Kids, you know this is Christopher's first chance to camp alone in the woods. It's something he's wanted to do for a long time. If I let you go, it would spoil his adventure." "But, Daddy, we want to camp too," Elise Marie whined. Jeremy Scott pouted. "It's not fair." "We'll all go camping soon," your father promised. "But, Daddy," they both said in unison. Not another word about it. Your father kissed them both, tucked them in, and left the room. I heard the children quietly count out all 12 steps as he went down the stairs. Soon as he reached the bottom, up jumped both your brother and your sister. They stuffed pillows under their blankets and pulled off their nightshirts. To my surprise, they were both fully dressed. They ran over and opened the window so quickly I barely had time to cover as I dropped to the ground with quite a loud thud. "It was terrible. I crushed one of your mother's finest rose bushes. The poor beautiful petals scattered all over. I'm afraid your mother will be very..." "Jasmer," Sylvan said patiently. "Oh, dear, I'm straying off the path again. Forgive me, and I do hope your mother will not blame the children. Anyway, off they ran into the woods." "What?" Christopher interrupted. "They jumped from the window?" "Oh, yes. Well, I skipped that part, didn't I?" No, they're not that foolish. This was well planned. They used the rope ladder from the treehouse. I wonder why they took it this afternoon, and why they were so careful not to be seen." Jasmer returned to his report. When they reached the ground, Jeremy Scott said, "There's Christopher's fire. Let's go." But Elise seemed puzzled. "I thought he camped over there." She pointed directly to where we are standing. "But you had just doused your fire." "He must have changed his mind," said your brother, "because there's his fire." Elise hesitated, but Jeremy started to make his way toward the light flickering in the woods. As she followed him, they crouched low to pass the large picture window in the den. Stopping, she watched as your mother rocked Michelle to sleep. "Thank you, Father, for my new little sister," she whispered. She stopped Jeremy. "We really shouldn't disobey Daddy." Jeremy looked ashamed and said, "Yeah, I know. You're right." They sat under the big picture window with gloomy faces. Jeremy's face brightened. "Since we're almost there, don't you think it would be all right for us just to tell Christopher goodnight?" "Well..." Your sister hesitated. "Besides, we didn't get to hug Gallant goodnight, and that's not fair, is it?" Jeremy knows how much Elise loves him. "Well, I suppose it wouldn't hurt if we come back right away," she gave in. It amazes me how much disobedience and wrongdoing are excused in order to make things fair. If humans... Jasmer, please. Yes, yes, yes. Of course, there I go again. Thank you, Brother Sylvan. You're so patient with me. Back to the point. Your brother and sister ran into the woods, and that's when the real trouble began. Christopher Harris looked sharply at Jasmer. You let them run off into the woods? Jasmer's face reddened as he glanced down and away from Christopher's glare. Sylvan spoke for his friend. Master Christopher, the True One does not allow Imbrox to correct humans. On the contrary, only on rare and desperate occasions such as this are we allowed any contact at all. Christopher swallowed hard and nodded. I didn't know. A quick judgment most often results in swift injustice, offered Sylvan. Jasmer smiled brightly. Oh, it's quite all right, Master. I forgive you. I'm so glad you understand, and I understand that you didn't understand how Jasmer? Oh, yes. The glee vanished from Jasmer's eyes, and he continued to his tale. Your brother and sister entered the forest, expecting to be at your campsite. Instead, the fire seemed to be deeper in the forest. I followed as they went further and further into the forest. I wanted to stop them, but as you now understand, I could not. Besides, I was slightly curious about the light as well. Finally, we came to a clearing with a sight that made our eyes compete with our mouths to see which could open the widest. In the middle of the clearing was a bush, burning, but not burning up. Without my quick eyes and ears, I may have been as taken in as your brother and sister by what happened next. Hearing a branch crack behind me, I turned and covered instantly, leaving but the slightest crack to peek through. My heart almost stopped. Walking out of the shadows was one of the most beautiful and most terrifying creatures I have ever seen. Its beautiful black scales shone like polished obsidian, with dead black eyes, with teeth like daggers, and with a tongue that could have been mistaken for a flame of fire flicking from its mouth. It walked straight toward me. To my horror, I could not complete my covering. I could not move. Though I wanted to scream to the True One for help, my voice fled in fear. It stopped. Its flame-like tongue licked out over its lips, as if relishing a meal set before it. I wanted to shout, "Come on, get it over with!" But my tongue, unlike my cape, was petrified. The beast stretched out its great wings, and looking up, gathered in all the light of the full moon. For a moment I was blinded by the flash of the beautiful white-gold light rushing to its new master. When my vision returned, before me stood a powerful creature of light, with wings of bright feathers, with kindest face uplifted toward the night sky, and with eyes closed as if in painful prayer. I almost unfurled with a shout of praise to the True One for sending this angelic Savior. At that moment, the eyelids opened. Two dead black holes overflowed with hate. It stepped over me towards your brother and sister, and I realized this seraph had not seen nor sensed me. It called in the sweetest voice, "Children." Hearing two gasps from behind, I found my courage and my muscle. I spun to see your brother and sister's astonished faces. They stood immobilized by the spell of wonder woven by this charlatan and his tricks. Opening my mouth to yell out a warning, a soft whisper commanded, "No." Seraph whipped around, searching for the speaker. Its borrowed beauty could not mask the panic beneath. My heart swelled with renewed hope, and I obeyed. The liar's spell lost some of its control over the children. Your sister asked, "Are you an angel?" Seraph reluctantly turned back to his prey. But Jeremy answered the question, "Of course not. Angels don't get scared." Nervously probing the shadows for that still small voice, Seraph replied, "You are wrong, my dear child. I am an angel." Technically, this was a true response. With only the straightforwardness children possess, your brother challenged that powerful creature. "So what are you afraid of?" But Seraph's cunning was too great. And besides, I believe the children really did want to believe it was what it pretended to be. "I am frightened for you, my dear ones. You have an important mission, and you have many enemies who will spill your blood to stop you." Elise said, "Jeremy, I knew we shouldn't have disobeyed Daddy. We know the forest can be dangerous, and I'm afraid we're lost." The look on your brother's face said he knew she was right. Seraph cocked his head to one side, alarmed by some sound not even I could hear. We must leave here at once, for I sense the enemy and his forces nearby. You must come with me now. I'm sorry. We can't go anywhere with strangers. That's my dad's rule, and we should not disobey again, Jeremy said firmly and crossed his arms. I was very proud of him. But where will you go? Seraph asked calmly. His head jerked with alarm once more. Both children were silent. They knew they were hopelessly lost and would have to wait there until morning when their father would come looking for them. And what will you do when the enemy comes? The children began to glance around at the shadows cast by the burning bush, dancing all around them. No, do not blame yourselves. You did not really disobey your father. He does not really understand. You actually obeyed a greater spirit than his when you answered the call of my fire. They turned to look at the bush. Just like Moses and Aaron, you two have a great mission. It always amazes me what silliness humans will accept without question when it comes to the opportunity of escaping immediate consequences for disobedience. I suppose they think the true one is as easily fooled as they are and can be convinced that right is wrong and wrong is right. If they would just take time to consider. Jasmer, please go on, interrupted Sylvan. We are very short on time. Forgive me. He cleared his throat and began again. Your brother and sister looked at one another. They both knew Seraph was wrong about their disobedience, but they were desperate. What mission? Your sister asked. You must come with me to the heart of the forest, where you will be crowned king and queen before all the wild creatures. Then you will cleanse the forest of all who do not swear allegiance to us. A look of excitement came in their eyes, and your brother's firmness began to waver. We are not to go with strangers, he repeated weakly. I may be a stranger to you, but you are not strangers to me. I am your guardian angel and your spirit guide. That liar lied. Jasmer paused as if suddenly taken captive by a disturbing thought. Sylvan prompted. Jasmer? Jasmer blinked hard twice and turned toward his comrade. Brother Sylvan, forgive me for straying from our pressing business, but how is Master Christopher to go with us if he is not allowed to go with strangers? All the Imbaroks began to murmur over the dilemma. Sylvan bowed his head and withdrew from the noise. Christopher grew more uncomfortable by the moment. Sylvan looked up and smiled reassuringly. Master and friends, fear not. Master Christopher will be led by a trusted and trustworthy friend, and under direct orders he will pursue his task. Friends, he will not go with us, but rather we will go with him. All present looked doubtingly at Sylvan. He calmly turned to Jasmer. Please continue. A skeptical Jasmer resumed his story. Seraph reached within the folds of his garment of light and pulled out two highly polished black scales, one in the form of a bracelet he placed on Elise's arm, and the other, a pendant, was placed around Jeremy's neck. A gift, that nasty creature lied again, for he said, yours, if you come with me and accomplish the task set before you. Now, who ever heard of such nonsense? Why, a gift is something given, not something earned. And in this I've learned sadly enough that children humans are almost as silly as adults, so often refusing gifts out of pride, or ruining gifts by trying to prove they really do deserve them, or trying to pay for them, or Jasmer. Oh, yes, please. I hope I did not offend you, Master, but it does amaze me. Jasmer. Yes, I know. No time for full thoughts or apologies. Oh, me. With difficulty, Jasmer returned to his story. Where was I? Oh, yes, the gifts. Both children stared hard into the charms. The scales became translucent, and both saw themselves in splendid robes, wearing golden crowns full of jewels. The longer they watched the images, the darker their faces grew. Their smiles of delight dulled into grimaces of greed. Their pupils grew larger, as if their wills drained out into those dark mirrors. They were in the gravest danger when Seraph snatched away the gifts, saying, if you come with me. Please, can't we look just a little longer, please, they begged. No, all must be put right before the new day begins. There is much we need to do before your coronation at dawn, Seraph said coldly. He continued dangling the charms before the children just beyond their reach. The children's whine stopped in frightened silence as a menacing growl came from the edge of the clearing. Quick as lightning, Seraph swept up the children, screaming, "Enemy! Wolf!" A huge form bounded out of the trees and over the burning bush, which flared up to engulf the attacker. The creature was too quick for the fire, but not swift enough for that dark angel of moonlight. Seraph rose high above the trees, bearing your brother and sister toward the heart of the deep wild. Your friend Gallant hesitated only a moment to lick a badly singed hind paw before pursuing the children and their captor. Heavy footsteps coming toward the camp abruptly ended Jasmer's tale as all the Emberocks covered in the flame of fellowship vanished into a pile of blackened rocks. Christopher heard his name and the extra calm manner with which Dad always spoke during an emergency. "Here, Dad," he answered, brandishing his flashlight. His dad came into the campsite, perplexed by the sudden disappearance of the fire. "No time to talk, son. Grandpa suffered a heart attack. We must get him to the hospital. We have the baby. You take care of your brother and sister. They're already in bed." "But, Dad..." "No time for talk, son. I've got to go." He turned and left, repeating, "I'm depending on you to take care of your brother and sister. Pray for Grandpa." He was gone. And Christopher had his orders.